I'm Ted Baker, and this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, Episode 91, Week 3 of the regular season, the Bucknell Bison at the Poole Family Dome, Saturday, 12 noon. Joined, as always, by the head coach of the Statesman, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ted.
So, of all of the tough losses I've seen over the years, I mean, this has to be the real gut punch. I mean, you played like a championship team for almost 40 minutes, and then what? What happened?
Well, I think a lot, you know, there's specific execution errors, Ted, that result in some momentum provided to the opponent. But also, I think, you know, we still have to hit a groove where the name on the jersey that we're playing doesn't affect our emotions so much. It, you know, I really do believe that when, you know, we're up 3 goals late in the third, you know, I think our guys start to play a momentum shifting game instead of just focused on what we need to do in order to execute well. And I think that that comes with a Big Ten opponent at times. And I think we need to work to grow that maturity, honestly. So I can show you the film and put together basically 4 execution clips that it's like, you know, you're kind of handing a Michigan team momentum right here, where I think if we're a little bit smarter, a little bit less emotional, those plays don't happen. You know, I think just knowing the clock at the end of a third quarter, you know, they go on a couple goal run, they bring it within 2, and then we turn the ball over with 30 seconds left on in the third quarter with kind of an ill-advised play, and then we foul, give them a man up in the fourth quarter, with which, you know, that team with their feet set is pretty dynamic, Ted. I think you saw in that game how capable they are at shooting the ball. And we just, you know, the game that we had from a pace scenario and a decision-making scenario, and like you said, those first 40 minutes, we basically lost sight of all that, gave them the ball repeatedly, and allow a team with great players some really good momentum. So, you know, an unfortunate end to the game, Ted, but I think in the locker room afterwards, our message as coaches, while disappointed in our ability to handle some up and down emotionally and handle a run from a different team, and stay even keel, we were disappointed in those things, but also, you know, told them how fired up we were at the intensity that we played with, the way that we handled the start of a game and continued through that halftime and that third quarter slump we've tended to have after year after year. So lots of positives, you know, no moral victories in this camp, and you know that, Ted. We don't support losses in ways that I think a lot of our support system does, where, you know, we're getting a lot of those messages that say, hey, great job, you hung with the big guys, da 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 da. We're not interested in any of that. We went into that game last Saturday to win it. So but I think the education you get from a loss like that is monumental, and there's really no other way to do it than experience it. So this group still needs to put together a 60-minute game, and we haven't had to yet through scrimmages, the Canisius game. We haven't been required to play 60 minutes yet. We've been up, we've subbed, we've this and that. So now that's been the focus of this week. Can we put 4 quarters together one at a time and continue to stay system based no matter what the up and down looks like?
I know you're not a yelling, screaming, stamping your foot kind of guy. So what were you doing and what were the guys doing to try to turn this around? What was happening? We see, on the other hand, we saw what Michigan did at the halftime. You know, they were yelling F-bombs all the way across the dome about their performance in the first half. I mean, you know, you can't wave a magic wand and say, okay, guys, play better now. But what were you trying to do as a coaching staff to get that turned around when it started going south late in the third?
Well, you know, I thought as a coaching staff, full transparency, Ted, we did a poor job reacting to the officiating and, you know, some of these calls that we had to challenge. I mean, there is a literal goal that I don't know as an official, you can't see a ball go into a net. That happened for us against Cuse last year at home. It happened for us against Michigan this year at home. And whether or not that goal has an impact on the outcome, who knows? But I think we as a staff talked to the team on Monday and said we have to do a better job as the leaders of this program to not let those calls affect us emotionally as much, because I think that had an impact on our guys. And so we'll be more even keel than they need to be. But in those moments, Teddy, I mean, you got to get your team as best you can to focus on one single play, one tiny play. I felt like we got big picture, and we were we tell our guys all the time, surrender the outcome, be the process, and you got to start breathing through positive thoughts right there. What can I do as an individual in these moments just to shift the momentum a bit? And it's not a big goal, it's not a big play, it's a ground ball, it's an approach on the ball defensively, it's communicating in a two-man game, it's all things that we really feel like fell apart in timeouts and in breaks. And unfortunately, those were so choppy with the challenges and this and that, that the fourth quarter was just a wreck. And the conversations have to be, we need one single stop. We don't need five in a row. We need one great possession. We don't need five great goals right now. So that we've talked a lot about that this week. When a team is going on a run, how we handle it both emotionally and execution-wise, and we got to just take care of the pennies, and the dollars take care of themselves.
Michigan came into that game as one of the best riding teams in the country, and you handled the ride in terms of clearing. In fact, you're one of the top clearing teams in the country right now at 90%. The problem came after you got across midfield. It was almost like they had a second half-field ride going that gave you some problems. Did you see it that way in terms of, we get across midfield and then it goes bad from there?
Yeah, a little bit. I think all good rides don't end at the midline. And I think the film work you have and the teaching clips you have going into an opponent like Bucknell are vital this week from one week to the other, because Bucknell is such a good riding team, and they'll provide that 10-man pressure virtually every time we have the ball. And I think the key for us is making sure we aren't impulsively reactive to when the ball crosses the midline and how we need to help it. I think a great trademark to our group is how willing they are to sprint for an outlet, to make sure they know that the ball's only cleared when we have possession of it in our box and we're controlling that pace. I just think our spacing was very poor at when the ball crossed that midline on multiple occasions. And so we've been very persistent on the balance in our clear, where the looks are when we have the ball below the midline, what the looks are when we have the ball over the midline, and how we basically transition into great possessions rather than, impulsively just running all over the place, trying to get the ball, trying to figure out how to help a teammate. There are ways to do it with a deep breath and proper execution.
It's the same thing with a face-off game. You had a lot of face-off wins and then really struggled to get into your offense in the midfield. Me and my stats, I was looking at the numbers, and you've had a difficult time converting face-off wins into good offensive possessions, it seems.
Yeah, that was, I would say, 70-30 to that in terms of good versus bad. Our guys did a pretty good job. I think Brick or Mikey Valente was a little bit off his game, and we threw a bunch of different looks at their face-off guy, who was different for them as well. But in a team like Michigan, who's their wing play, that's where you see them as fast and as strong as they really are. I think the Billings kid on the wing is a big problem. Number 12 for them, number 3, the Clay kid. Those are just very fast and difficult players to manipulate. So I think what they figured was where we had an advantage at the dot, they were going to try to take advantage afterwards. And again, another thing that you live and you learn. We're prepping much better for proper wing play, which again, I think 70% of the time on those wings did a pretty good job. And I think the first time ground balls versus duffing this thing and how we run to space. And again, the point I made with the clear, it's the same from face off to offense, Ted. We have to have great balanced outlets. We can't be crowding the ball. There's not anything we can do as a teammate 4 yards away from the ball carrier. Like we have to make sure we're providing distance and space for the guy with the ball to make proper decisions.
See, sometimes you can actually be too close to the guy. You're better off if you're 10 yards away and give him a window to pass.
Yeah, that's where double teams come from. That's where with a guy under pressure already, you're giving him more. And that's something we need to see. I think a great spaced offense and a great space clear is under the ideology of pressure with more pressure is not a good thing. So and all the hooting and hollering, and he's open and he's open, da, 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 and you hear like that, the crowd just start to rise in anxiousness. It's and our guys start to feel that. So we have to combat it with, again, it sounds redundant, but we have to execute in those moments, not just work hard. And so, I think the difference in those two, or the two being combined, is what we're attempting to execute much better this weekend.
Let's talk a little bit about those first 40 minutes. I mean, the offensive motion was there again, guys moving off ball, making good passes with purpose, getting good, accurate shots. And of course, Alex Rosa is just lighting it up right now.
Yeah, man, we hope he keeps doing it. I think there are guys that are settling into roles, Ted, that you're going to start to see them execute much more consistently throughout the course of this season. We have an offense that we really believe is selfless, and I think the guys like Rosie, John Jude, and Delly are huge parts of that. I think they have great capabilities individually. I think we're starting to recognize how much we can move the ball and get it back. What the spacing and the movement does for a defense. And I know, I just sent an email to one of our alums about the how proud they should be at the way that this team is practicing. Offensively in particular, it's been a couple years. And again, I've reiterated how much we've loved our teams in these past two seasons and this and that. But there's some practices where, as coaches, we get to sit back and watch and just see them compete, understand what works and what doesn't. The trick is, after that 40 minutes, like you've mentioned, are we going to reflect on the things that make our offense great and make our defense great, or are we going to start to make plays or try to make plays individually, which for us from a system standpoint isn't who we are. So what you saw is what this offense can do when it's clicking, when it's spaced out. You saw some speed and Kate Dino and some manipulating matchups with John Jude and what Connor DiTommaso does for us in a different element. And again, there's some names that we had some guys out with the flu. We have some guys with this and that, and there's some names you haven't even seen yet. So we're excited about some depth and some guys settling into some system roles that I think can make us click quite a bit.
Obviously, when you give up goals, the focus tends to be on the goalie, but it's a whole unit. It's a defensive unit in front of the goalie. So how is that defense shaping up? We saw Tyler Cavo back, which, we keep seeing these guys going, oh, yeah, we didn't have that guy. And John Jude, and oh, we didn't have him last year. And Dino, oh, we didn't have him last year.
Right, you're right. It's nice, and the focus for the coaching staff and Coach Barry and our great sports medicine staff and Hannah, we're all in on making sure these guys stay on the field. It's a huge key for us. I mean, Ted, we can get on this podcast, once conference play starts and talk about all the strategies and this and that, but if we have these guys playing on game day, we're just going to keep getting better, in my opinion. So that's a huge focus. And from a defensive standpoint, you have the same contrast in that 40-minute period to what happened after with how they executed. So, excuse me, how we executed on that end of the field. It's a detail-oriented group for 40 minutes, and then it becomes a reactive group for 40 or for 20. And when we're proactive defensively and we're urgent off ball, our off ball positioning, li literally how we're standing, Ted, is when it's good, we're good. And when we are a little bit tired, a little bit lackadaisical in the details that help that defense function, we give up goals like anybody else. You know, I still think you saw a small element of who Jack is and who he's going to be for us. It's another message we sent to him again. We said, you know, much better, but I still think we're seeing, you know, just a tiny bit of what you're capable of, and he agrees. So we're on that same platform defensively as we are offensively, is can we put together 4 15-minute games on Saturday where all the details are accounted for?
Of course, we're playing another game at the Poole Family Dome this week. Have the goalies said anything specifically about how easy or difficult it is to see the ball inside?
No, I mean, and I'm so glad they haven't. It's, you know, because there's nothing we can do, you know, so control your controllables. I mean, this winter has been unkind on everybody trying to play this sport. And we're just, if anybody on this roster, Ted, complains about anything in that dome, I'm going to shut that down in a fierce manner. So we are very
Have an
fortunate.
outdoor practice, huh?
Oh yeah, I mean the Boswell Field looks like the cooler right now. So it, you know, I think we're goalies, from goalies to face-off guys and coaches included, everybody in between. I think we're just pleased we can be in there. We're pleased that we have a space where we can get better daily. We don't have to worry about where we're practicing and when. So it's different, but right now they don't know much else. We haven't been outside in a constructive practice for 5 weeks. So, you know, I think, and that's just the way it's had to be. There's been no opportunity for us to say, hey, let's tough this practice out. Let's get outside. I know it's a little bit cold. I mean, it's been 5 degrees. It has been snowing, raining, freezing, or whatever it is. So, we haven't even had that opportunity. So I think that them recognizing that, and we continue to reiterate how lucky we are, is the main focus. The fact that we're in there is just it's an awesome thing.
You mentioned one thing about officiating earlier, and I always hate to dwell on it, so I won't dwell on it. But the one thing that still drives me crazy is just basic pushing and shoving, especially on faceoffs. There were about 42 identical pushes in that game, and like two of them got called, and the other 40 got let go.
Yeah, I mean, I in the moment, it's really hard for me to empathize with, you know, anybody wearing the black and white stripes, you know, but I think afterwards when I watch the game, and you know, Ted, we study this stuff, we talk to the head of the officials, we ask questions in between games that, you know, there's a circumstance where they challenge a call that they can't challenge, and you know, that goal John Jude scored, flags are down, so you can't challenge a call. That's not the way that works. But then the challenge wasn't, they still got their timeout back after the red flag was thrown, and I'm trying to ask questions, and you know, the officials are like, coach, I gotta watch the game. It's, you know, it's and the pushes, the moving picks, they're so in the moment. I just don't know is that we have a game, the type of game where we're going to be pleased with the officiating ever, just because there's so many different elements to basically incorporate rules, and there are so many rules, and they change and they grow in importance. You know, the officials are, this is a focus this year. You know that before games, you know, the high hits, that they're a focus this year. I'm like, great. Well, what about, you know, moving picks that we've seen them set? What about a team going off sides when they're riding? And I mean, so from end to end, element to element, you know, they're on it as much as they can be. So the sympathy is never there. And I'll never find it, but the empathy after the game, when I watch it, I'm like, it's a tough game to officiate, man. There's no way around that.
Do you go to the officials before a game about a specific team if you see something they're doing, like you say, hey, these guys always set moving screens here, or like you said, being offside or something? Or do you see certain tendencies in a team that you alert them to and say, hey, just can you watch this for me?
Yeah, for sure. It just never works. So the craziest thing, and this isn't a truth, this is just a feeling, is that when I bring up a topic that I believe the other team does illegally or gets away with some of these or some of those throughout the course of their games that we've seen, I always feel like they get called against us when I bring that to their attention for the opponent. So I pick and choose, man. It's kind of like a marriage. You pick your battles, right? So you can't fight all of them. So before games, I go through my prep for a game, and I honestly think and contemplate, what am I going to bring to the officials' attention? And will that benefit us at all? Or can I trust them to just see it in the moment? So yeah, there's a little bit of that, but it's also, they're like, again, all those moving parts, I think it ignites the topic that I've brought up, and they may see it in the wrong spot on occasion. So I do, but yeah, there's a give and take there for sure.
The Bucknell Bison this Saturday at 12 noon, Poole Family Dome. It's Hobart versus Hobart. We got Frank Fedoraca, Hobart guy. Matt Kerwick, Hobart guy, former head coach. Tom Gravante, Hobart guy, former head coach. I guess Babe Krause wasn't available, huh?
It's crazy, isn't it? I saw these guys down at the coaches convention, and there's some alums down there, and just kind of talked about this matchup, and trying to find the right words to honor it correctly. I think, with everything we're influenced by from a Coach Urich standpoint, all of these guys having played for that man. You got class of 88, 89, 90 on the other sideline. It's just a really cool thing. I wish I had more mature or intelligent words to describe it, but it doesn't happen often. So I think the uniqueness or how special it is kind of driving our respect for this contest. And I think the circumstances from Michigan to Bucknell are certainly harnessing our focus. In the end, on Saturday, this is another opponent that wants to beat us, and we want to beat them. So, like we tell our guys from a competition standpoint, a healthy competitor is knowing you have an opponent that wants what you want. You just got to find a way to want it more. And that can't be forgotten, because we've got three Hobart legends on the other sideline. So I think the trick for us is, how are we showing great respect for them, honoring them properly, and communicating that to our men, but also keeping a fierceness to our approach to this thing and an intensity on game day that those three on the other sideline and all alums can be pretty proud of.
Now, Bucknell, I mean, you think of them in the past, and this rivalry has been on hold for about the past 11 or 12 years as kind of a grinded out type of team. But this year, they're scoring 18 goals a game. I mean, their top attack guys have ridiculous numbers. Number 45 and 55 are putting the shots on target 80% of the time. So you've got to limit shots against this team. If they get shots, they're going to get in the net. So how do you limit shots for a prolific offense like that?
One, you got to get them to play less offense. I think what we've seen in their games is how quickly they respond to turnovers from their ride, and how good they are from an early offensive standpoint. How confident the hands are of 45, 5, and 55. These are three great players, and they also have awesome counterparts around them. 45 is scoring more goals than anybody in the country per game right now, Ted. So, that's not by chance. I do think there's a lot to be desired in their first two opponents in terms of how they executed and how they handled Bucknell's pressure from one end to the other. So I believe that we can do it better. But the first key is making sure that the more they get to play, the better they're going to be. And also, when we are on a def in a defensive mindset in the half field, we have to locate those guys. We have to locate 45 and 5 and know where they are, and just keep in mind what they're capable of. That's, the free flow of the game puts you in scenarios defensively where you have to support the ball. You got to play the ball well. You have to do all things that that are required from a team defense. But we have to add elements of their capability into our execution. So we got to keep an eye on 45, 5, and 55, and make sure that we know that if they have good days, it's going to be a hard day for us defensively.
Do you brief the goalies on where guys are likely to shoot? Do you say, okay, this guy likes to go low off stick side, or is that too much thinking for them?
No, I don't think it's too much thinking at all. We certainly prep our goalies for the best shooters in the opponent and where they like to shoot from and where they're typically going when their feet are set. I think the difficulty with, specifically a guy like 45, it's like, he's going to mix it up. He's going to get his hands free. And so you just got to be a good goaltender. You got to react to the ball a little bit. So there are some guys that you see and say, hey, he's going low to high every time. And he's not going to shoot unless, and da 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 da. But so you prep him as much as you can. You also just tell him in the end, listen, don't think too much. When this guy's hands are free, he's going to let it fly. So react well to the ball. Be quick, don't guess, and once you save it, let's get out quick.
So when you get ready for this game and you look at last week's game, how much of the emphasis is on the last 20 minutes? Hey, guys, don't do that again. How much of it is on the first 40 and saying, this is the team we can be for 60 minutes. Let's go do it.
Yeah, definitely more of the latter. I want positive thinking. I want positive breaths. I want our guys to put themselves in positive scenarios. I think that the prevention of certain play is going to tighten the team up like crazy. The promotion of great play and what we're capable of is where we're at as a coaching staff. So we also trust this team, Ted, a ton. I think the guys at the helm are communicating all the right things. And so, we are, as a staff, doing our best to continue to motivate in a team that I don't think needs much. And also making sure that they see the plays that we are most proud of, the plays that we can capitalize on. And the communication as a staff isn't don't do this. It's more so, hey, next time this comes around, let's try these things, I think that positive reinforcement is going to be great for this team going forward. And it's where we've been at all week.
All right, this has been the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast. It's the Bucknell Bison at the Poole Family Dome at 12 noon this Saturday on WEOS. You can get this podcast on Apple, Zoom, Spotify, wherever you go, and get all your information at hwsathletics.com. We've been talking with the head coach, Greg Raymond. Thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right, Ted. Thanks, brother.